the Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We continue our discussion about cybersecurity today. My guests are head of the Political Science Department at the University of Cincinnati, Richard Harknett, and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor Information Technology, Mark Stockman. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's hard to have a discussion about security and cybersecurity without bringing up Edward Snowden's name and the situation with the NSA. What's your take on each of those? And Mark, we'll start with you.
Well, Snowden, he had a lot of technical capabilities, which is why he was able to get such a high-paying job with a lot of access inside. He had IT skills as well as a security clearance from some of the work he had done before. So he was in a position to see some information that not a lot of other people had access to. He saw something that he thought should become public, and he did that. He made it public to the United States because he had a feeling that this should be known by the citizens of the United States what was going on by their government.
Richard?
Yeah, I think I have two additional takes on that. One is when you talked about threats earlier, one of the most problematic threats is the insider threat, right? So Snowden's a good example when we think about it just purely from a cybersecurity standpoint, right? The access that he had and the activities that he engaged in were outside the functionality that he should have been. Right, but he was able to do that, and he exposed a lot of information from the NSA. The concern I have about the conversation that he's generated from a cybersecurity standpoint, right, is that cybersecurity and privacy are different, are distinct. They interrelate, but they're distinct. And I'd be concerned that the conversations about individual privacy get us sidetracked from policy discussions about cybersecurity. And this has happened actually outside of this NSA thing when you look at the Senate debates over this. I mean, in reality, the government isn't tracking my individual web searches and then my locator device on my GPS and knowing exactly where I am right now. But Google is, right? And so we are, for some reason, we're really concerned about the old Orwellian Big Brother version of government, and it's taking away of our privacy.
And that's actually one part of the story that hasn't come out is the idea that these companies willingly provided their database of information over to the government without any legal rationale that they had to, that they willingly gave up this information because it was easier for them, because they didn't have to respond to the one-off requests that the federal government was asking of them prior to the situation.
Our number, 513-419-7100. Rick is calling from Indianapolis. Rick, what's your question?
I just wanted to point out, the professor said that some financial companies have to execute penetration testing once per year. But in fact, private companies that accept payment via Visa, MasterCard, et cetera, have to execute penetration testing and submit documentation once per quarter that verifying that their systems are safe from hackers. Many companies falsify that documentation and turn it in, and it's because, as the professor said, that companies don't want to spend the dollars for the security, but they still want to get paid with those payment cards.
Do you find that's true, that companies are falsifying their testing?
I don't know any data about that.
Yeah, that's the payment card industry data security standards, and if you look up the PCI DSS.
Do you work in the field?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Companies that accept payment via MasterCard, American Express, the Japanese credit cards have to, again, turn in that documentation each quarter. But I've seen statistics that as many as 60% of the companies are not compliant with the PCI DSS. However, they turn in documentation indicating that they are compliant. That's all I have to say.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think
thank you.
I think Rick raises a, you know, an interesting point there in terms of we're still at a very immature stage of regulation. And I know that's sort of a dirty word, but it also is the way you actually have an efficient system, right? So the regulatory norms and the regulatory patterns associated with this are still very early stage. Again, I don't – with Mark, I agree. I haven't seen any specific data on how much fraud there might be in the reporting. But the what the caller said in terms of what our expectations about compliance should be and what they are is probably in the ballpark.
Right. 513-419-7100 if you have a question. Bob, what's your question today?
Well, I was just hoping – hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. I was just hoping to make the point that Mr. Snowden went to a reporter with his knowledge and revealed this program. But I wonder what your guests think. Is it possible that other insiders could do things like people in Snowden's position who I'm talking about could go things like do things like go to a mafia boss, you know, the Mexican mafia, the Russian mafia, you know, not to, but I mean, if they took that information that Snowden had access to and were to use it for evil means, I mean, Snowden's doing us a favor by showing that this potential for abuse is out there.
And that absolutely is a problem, Bob. And actually, Snowden has put himself in the situation where he may be compelled to do that by running from the U.S. government. So, you know, I keep thinking about, you know, how is he going to support himself for the rest of his life on the run? And the only thing I come back to is being able to sell his knowledge that he has of the systems of the United States.
And when you think about the offer that Putin made, it sounded sort of nice, right? Putin said, you know, we'll give you asylum if you don't release any information that would damage our American friends. All of a sudden, Putin was worried about us, Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia. But what he was actually saying to Snowden is you can get asylum if you give us the information, right? You just don't release it public anymore. So he's not only, I agree with Mark, but he's in a very compromised position right now, right? Because he has a lot of information on him that he has not released. And whether that he's been able to keep that out of Russian or Chinese hands is an open guess right now.
Bob, I'm sorry.
And that's actually, you know, a situation that companies and governments have to look at with their system administrators is, you know, as an IT employee, you have technical access to a lot of information. And companies need to be careful to put the controls on there. Some, you know, talking about the federal government now requiring that you have two administrators okay any release of data like Snowden was able to get us by himself.
And Marianne, that goes also to this issue of just education. You know, is starting to have in our schools conversations about cyber ethics, right? And what sort of are the norms, right? So what we see in terms of the younger generation is their views about transparency versus secrecy is somewhat different now when you look at some of the survey data about that. So, you know, what are the ethics that this next generation who's going to be working in this digital space have about this?
Bob, thanks for your call. You talk about those ethics. What is the general thought on that? What are you as instructors telling your – or professors telling your college students in terms of ethics? What are some of the most important ethical ideas that you have that you try to share with your students?
Well, as I teach information technology students who are going to go on to these positions like Snowden has, again, I come back to this idea that they hold the keys to a lot of important information. That if they, you know, make a mistake on the job technically, it might mean their job. But if they make a lapse in their ethics on the job, it can mean their career. So this whole amount of work that they've worked up to and working in the computing space could be gone if they have a lapse in their ethical standards.
But what are some of those specifically that you can say? I mean, obviously, you don't want to share information. You don't want to hack. I mean, is there a list of, you know, 10 major ethical mistakes you can make or anything like that?
Well, we do have a few courses that are required in our information technology degree on IT ethics. So we going into, again, the idea that you have access to a lot of information that's proprietary to your employer that, you know, shouldn't be divulging, that you shouldn't be, you know, getting into the human resources systems and looking at pay and employment data for your colleagues. You know, even down to specific technical requirements of your companies. Your company may not require you to take or plug in USBs into company-owned computers, or may not allow you to take company-owned laptops and hook them up into other networks at home or elsewhere.
And this will become even more important as we become more reliant on mobile devices. And a lot of companies, for cost savings purposes, right, are moving to this bring your own mobile, right, and using your private device for, you know, working in your company space. And so that raises all other issues, right, about how do you find that that gray area between, okay, is this my cell phone or is this my company phone, right? And what am I constrained from doing over here? What can I download in a corporate space that I can't download in a private space? So we have challenges to think, you know, sort of out of the box about those types of gray areas.
513-419-7100. Let's talk, take it down to the personal level now. Mm-hmm. What can the average person do to keep their privacy, to keep things held private and to not set themselves up for being hacked and having people come in and get on their networks and all those sorts of things?
Well, Mark? Of course, a lot of it comes down to passwords. We're still in a technical evolution where passwords are everything. We haven't gotten into where a lot of companies now are starting to do multiple layers of authentication rather than just a password because of the lack of security in passwords. But that's certainly one thing that – the thing that individuals can do is to create strong passwords rather than default passwords. Or online, there's lists of the most common passwords that people use. Password.
I guess one of them is password.
Right, password or 123. So having a password that's complex enough and, you know, there's some strategies, you know, some people talk about using a passphrase instead. So using a full sentence rather than a word or perhaps taking that sentence and using the first letter out of that sentence in your head and using the first letter for the password that you're using. The other thing with passwords that a lot of people do, and I find myself guilty of this as well, is using the same password for all of your accounts. And of course, the problem with that is if one of the systems gets hacked and your password is in there, all of a sudden a hacker has access to your password across all of your accounts. For instance, a few years ago, LinkedIn had their passwords compromised. If you used your same password for LinkedIn that you used for your bank and a hacker had access to the LinkedIn database, all of a sudden they can start using that password across different accounts to try to hack into your accounts.
But you get password fatigue.
Right.
I mean, I have such a time. You know, I'm always changing my password because
right.
I can't remember what it was. So, email me a new one.
Then that's what I do a lot as well. There are what we call password managers. So there are pieces of software that you can download. And basically, it will give you a random password for every site that you're using. And you'll only have to remember the master password for that locker of passwords. And so basically, whenever you go into a certain site, you pull up this application, you copy out the password for LinkedIn, for Facebook, and then use that. And so you have a situation there where it's automating some of this ability to allow you to create multiple passwords for different sites.
I think a couple of other things is add a little extra inconvenience of, you know, not keeping your credit card stored, right? But putting the information in each time that you're going to do that. Again, it's an extra little layer, but a little less convenient. Read your app protocols, right? You know, when you go and decide to download an app, look at what you're giving them access to, right? And make sure that that's something that you're comfortable with.
What is okay to be comfortable with? There's a couple of apps I tried to download on my phone recently, and then it came back, yes, and we'll do this and this. And I thought, well, I don't want them to know that, right. But I really want this app, and then I just don't download it.
Well,
not a 20-year-old either who's eager to get
it. The other thing is if you look at the reviews of the applications, it'll give you a lot of information. So, you know, if it's rated as, a, you know, 2 stars and people come back and say, you know, this app didn't do this, it actually stole this data, then that's an indication maybe not to use that app. Another problem that we find when we're talking about applications is, you know, we have all of our devices that are Wi-Fi enabled and we have more and more areas where we have free Wi-Fi. And so that sets up a situation where if you're in a store that has free Wi-Fi and you're connected to it, another shopper in that store can be sniffing the network over over the wireless and be able to grab anything you send across there. So it's very important to realize what networks that your devices are attached to. And if you're doing any type of work in a space that has free Wi-Fi, to utilize your VPN connection to your corporate or your school's network so you can set up an encrypted tunnel.
Richard?
Well, and just to recognize that this individual level security actually has a national security implication, right? Because for every single individual device that's compromised, these can be used by both nation state, terrorist groups, criminal groups in what we call botnets, bringing all of these compromised computers together to actually engage in significant criminal activity or national security attacks. So we have a private interest in protecting ourselves, but we also have sort of a civic duty, right, component to this, that our individual insecurity can actually make the country more vulnerable.
We have time for one quick last phone call. Joe's calling from Cincinnati. Joe, what did you have to say?
Yeah, you've partially answered my question, but you had talked about being careful about the apps that you might download and checking out the companies. How do you check out some company that's called XYZ Software from Redmond, Washington? You know, where do you find reviews, or do you really have to, you can't really travel out and check the company and make sure they're reputable.
What do you all recommend?
Well, again, you know, what's great about the internet is it's free and open and that people can give reviews. And so looking at those reviews and trying to get an accumulation of, okay, what is the vast majority of the people are saying about this particular piece of software?
Part of that also is to sort of finding trusted sources of where to download from. So your iTunes store or your Google Play are having some filtering effect, right, to keep some bad stuff out. I would be very cautious about downloading apps directly from a website. You're not sure, again, if it's not a trusted website to do that
right
from.
And with that as well, one other problem is if you root or jailbreak your phone, sometimes you can download some applications or have an operating system that now is no longer as secure as you'd like it to be.
Joe, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
And thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. It's been very enlightening.
Thank you, Maria.
Go home and figure out what to do next with my phone and my computer.
And we don't want people to unplug. We just got to get them to think more through this.
Thank you so much. We've been talking about cybersecurity. My guests have been head of the Political Science Department at the University of Cincinnati, Richard Harknett, and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor Information Technology, Mark Stockman. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.